How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com. I'm here with Sam Jam Packard, the great, taking a break from a little thesis writing. the Ivy League, man. It sounds like a tough gig. He's taking a little break, study break, to chat about the Celtics, and specifically the Celtics starting lineup. We could go to some less promising things, but the Celtics starting lineup has just eviscerated teams since the All-Star break. The defense is really picking up. The offense is astounding right now. So the Celtics starting five has been a monster. So we're going to dive into that. So some pretty impressive stats from that group. We're going to compare that group to the starting lineups from the other Eastern Conference contenders. We'll get into a little bit about Micah Shrewsbury earning some consideration for the UMass job and what type of loss that would have been had UMass picked him, even though UMass did not pick him. So it's clearly a big news day when we get into stuff like that. And we'll do a little mystery machine, So, Sam, let's start with the Celtics starting lineup, which is now the fourth best lineup in the NBA with at least 250 minutes played this season, an 11.2 net rating for the season, which is fantastic. Since the All-Star break, it's been even better, 122 offensive rating, 101.1 defensive rating, 20.9 net rating, which is just sparkling, I say. That group has just been electric and really lit up the Washington Wizards after like a little slow start. The Wizards really poured in a ton of shots early, but that Celtics starters has just been magnificent lately. How promising is it that the starting lineup has been as good as it has been when healthy? And how much does it change their team to have those guys all together?
A lot, I'm going to say, with my son. They've been very good, and we've seen their defense really step up since the All-Star break. And it's something that the Celtics struggled with for the most of the year, is they came out and were this great offensive team, but were really not stopping anyone on defense. And if anyone was a little bit smart, they made some good money betting some Celtics overs. I'm not going to say I did that on betdsi.com, promo code Locked Celtics. But they were giving up a lot of points, and they were scoring a lot of points. And that's kind of not what we were used to with this Celtics team. So it's nice to see them get back to their kind of defensive roots and really improve on that end of the court. And it just makes the quality of basketball for the rest of the game, even when they're not in, that much better, because it pushes Marcus Smart to the bench. It makes Kelly Olynyk on the bench. It just makes it so you have Tyler Zeller minutes.
Hey, Tyler Zeller was a monster on the glass against Washington. Shout out to Tyler Zeller.
Well, if you listened to the podcast last night, I gave Tyler Zeller his fair due. Tommy Heinsohn went on and on about his soft hands, as he's wont to do. But it just makes the depth that much better. But it's really good that their team is doing so well with the starters. And as well as they played in that second quarter, also the starters returning in the fourth quarter, which kind of put an end to the run of the Wizards. I know Marcus Smart made some big plays, but he's not a starter. But there's just some stability with this starting unit that is nice for the Celtics to have, where you put those guys in the game, and I don't know, you just feel better about it. Now, here's my question to you, Jay, is it the starters, or is it what I dubbed last night the core four of Bradley, Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, and Al Horford? Like, how important is Amir Johnson to the starters' success? Because it feels like if you put Kelly Olynyk in there, you probably have some similar numbers. And I know the Kelly Olynyk lineup actually has a better net rating. It's a much smaller minutes, a much smaller sample size, but it's a better net rating than the starting lineup.
Yeah, I do think Amir has improved a lot defensively. I think his improvements have been a big reason for why the Celtics defense has solidified over the year, especially with that starting group. I do think Kelly Olynyk overall might be a better player and certainly a more dynamic offensive player. And if we're talking about closing lineups, then yeah, Kelly Olynyk has to be, I think, in that conversation, as long as you're going to stay big. But Amir Johnson has done a really good job quietly over the last few weeks. And I say quietly because that's kind of how Amir Johnson normally does his business. He's been really good defensively, and he's really helped them. I think a few other things have changed since the beginning of the year. I think Jay Crowder took a long time to get over the lingering ankle issue. That was like, it was just a sprained ankle, but that lasted a long time. He was clearly not moving like himself for a long time. Now he is. There were some sequences in that Washington game that he just wowed you with his energy, his mobility, his hustle. And that's the type of impact that Crowder did not make earlier this season. Obviously, he was shooting 40-something percent earlier in the year, really knocking down a ton of shots, and he was helpful anyway. But now he's hitting the glass. He is rebounding like a monster lately. He is getting those hustle plays. He had that chase down steal. He's really good at that. Like letting a guy go by him almost and then reaching in and knocking it off someone's leg. He does that really, really well. Like most guys get beat and it's over. Crowder gets beat. He has this habit of being able to still impact the play, which is pretty impressive. I think he's been a lot. But I think Avery Bradley, too, has been – I don't want to say he was not impactful defensively early, but he didn't live up to his standard. And I do think that with that starting lineup, a lot of it was they were learning how to play with the fact that they could finally score. For years, that group has been like offensively challenged, and now they can rein in three-pointers. They are more dynamic with the basketball. And I think it took them a while to get back to that hard hat mentality. Maybe I'm wrong there, but it just looks better defenders that is back now. And they.
How much do you think it had to do with kind of communication and working Al Horford into the mix? Because when you're playing like a very solid team defense, there has to be like a lot of kind of knowing what your teammates are going to do, but then communication, especially from that person who's being in that back, like on a rim protector position, is it just kind of more comfortable? I mean, I definitely health has been a major thing, but is it just more comfortable, like getting the minutes in, getting the reps in, so they're just better at anticipating what each other's doing?
I think that's probably part of it, and I don't know to what extent that makes a difference, but you know, one thing about Jared Sullinger that Brad Stevens used to say all the time, and Sullinger obviously had his flaws, but Stevens used to point out on a number of occasions how smart Sullinger was defensively. and how intelligent he was, you know, calling out plays and telling guys where to be and positioning himself at the proper depth to handle pick and roll coverage, all the things that you don't really notice Sullinger was talented at. And for Horford, I'm sure there was an adjustment period. And as you said, when you're the guy handling all the pick and rolls and calling out all the coverages and tasked with all the communication, that's a big deal. Earlier in the season, you know, to that point, the Celtics had a lot of miscommunication, and it wasn't always Horford involved. There were a lot of like missed switches between guards and just ugly plays that I think they've done a better job of eliminating recently. I think there's just been less of that carelessness, although Brad Stevens after the Wizards game pointed out that he hasn't liked the level of carelessness that the Celtics have used at times. And mostly I just think, you know, being healthy is a huge difference for them. When that group is together, the Celtics are really good. You look at some of the stats. That starting lineup is shooting almost 44% from the three-point arc as a group and hitting about 15 three-pointers per 48 minutes, which is absolutely elite. Like, if you look at all the lineups in the league, there are only basically like two teams that match them for both volume and percentage, and that's certain lineups from the Warriors and certain lineups from the Rockets. And that's essentially it. Like, the Celtics starters can rain hell on top of your neck. They just really, really spread teams out, and Isaiah Thomas cracks through. And having Avery Bradley, having Jay Crowder develop as shooters, having Al Horford to make plays has turned that starting lineup from what was really a bad half-court offense to one of the best half deal when you get to fourth quarter minutes. And I think it'll be a huge deal come playoff time when you're not going to be relying on transition. You're not going to be relying on fast breaks because there just isn't as much of it. Against good teams, it's harder to get out on the break and it's harder to get those easy baskets. You need to execute in the half court, and the Celtics starters have done a great job of that. I do think when you look at it, and obviously Cleveland, Washington, Toronto. I think Toronto's like the great unknown, aren't they? Like, their defense has been spectacular, really good, a top five defense since Kyle Lowry went out because, you know, the additions of Serge Ibaka, the addition of PJ. I think there's huge potential there, but throwing an all-star into the mix and not having any time to practice or prepare before the playoffs is going to be really difficult. And then to make matters worse, they're probably going to draw Cleveland in the first round. So I think the Raptors might be the top challenger to Cleveland if they're healthy. But at the same time, like, they might be out. They might be out a quick series in round two. Who knows? I don't know what will happen there. But back to the Celtics, the starting lineup, I think, is really promising. And as minutes, as the rotation short, have that starting lineup you can rely on. And for the first time, really, of the Brad Stevens era, the Celtics have an elite starting lineup.
Well, given that they're kind of so reliant on their top guys being healthy.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
This is something me and John talked about last night, but we didn't really come to a great answer. Do you consider trying to find times to rest someone like Jay Crowder, who we just talked about, is kind of needs has been much better since he's coming back from that ankle? Rest Avery Bradley, who's coming back. What's more important, these guys being 100% at the going into the playoffs, or some potential fight for the one seed?
Well, I think there are a few things going on the rest of the way. I don't just mean easy by the strength of schedule. They only have three road games left. They only have one back-to-back left. From the standpoint of rest and recovery and trying to get healthy for the playoffs, just playing their regular schedule should be beneficial. Like the Cavaliers still have four back-to-backs left somehow. And other teams like the Wizards have, their starting lineup has played, I want to say, 1,100-something minutes this year, which is almost four times as much as the Celtics. Those guys, especially Wall and Beal, have played a lot of minutes this season. They've lost, I think, four of their last five games. They could be running out of the gas a little bit. They have relied so much on those guys, and they haven't had hardly any rest. And especially in Beal's case, this is the first time he's played this many games, this many minutes, probably in his entire career, considering how often he's been injured. Now, I don't know exactly what type of impact that has, but it's got to be difficult once your body starts reaching levels of exertion that it never has in the past. And back to your question, resting guys, Stevens probably won't do it. He has said on several occasions he really wants to get the normal what should be the normal rotation, some real repetitions. And why I say what should be the normal rotation, because they've only had their starting lineup for 29 games now, and they really haven't had their expected rotation throughout much of the season. So all the groups that he's using and that he's wanted to use all year are kind of being not used for the first time, but they haven't had as many reps as he would like. And considering that, I think to try to propel bench units, he's played a lot more minutes with the bench lately. They've rarely gone to lineups without either Isaiah or Al in the last few games. I think it's important to play those guys and get them in a rhythm. And I wouldn't be too worried about the concept of rest, just because, again, that schedule isn't too taxing over the rest of the way.
So why, answer me this question, why Jonas get benched last night?
That is a good question. I was wondering that. So last time he got benched, what was it, a week ago? It was because, who was it? Somebody played traditional bigs, and the Celtics thought they needed more size to rebound. Well, it was Chicago, and he received a DNP against Chicago, and Steven said it was basically because of the matchups. They wanted to be able to rebound. Against Washington, I think it kind of went the other way, where Washington downsized so much, and they went to random, like, Markieff Morris at the five lineups and Horford at the five, or Olynyk at the four, and just tried to bully the Wizards down low with him, and they did a pretty good job, I think, of utilizing that to get some buckets. So maybe it was a matchup thing. I can't imagine he'll be out of the rotation for good or anything like that, but I was a little surprised that he wasn't used in that matchup. And that, like, they went to Tyler Zeller in the first half, and obviously Zeller was good. You gave him his props like you should. But yeah, the Jarebko thing was weird. The Celtics bench, I mean, it hasn't been good. I mean, when you look at their bench, it's easy to see why they fail. You know, they have two guards, Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, who shoot about 36% from the field and can't finish and don't really draw free throws. They have Jaylen Brown, a rookie still learning the game. He's not really a shooter, although he's made a few shots. He's definitely not someone you need to, like, lock and trail around screens. They have Olynyk and Jarebko, who are both useful players, but, like, not the most athletic or strongest guys down low. Like, their bench is young, and the perimeter guys can't really shoot, and the big guys aren't the greatest rebounders. So Yeah, I do think they've tried to buoy that a little bit with Horford playing with the second unit, and that has somewhat worked to various extents, but they need to stop squandering opportunities, and they need to stop turning the ball over as much as they have. I mean, that sequence at the end of the Philadelphia game was that.
Oh, my God, that was
horrendous. And I mean, you look at it, that cost them really the game. That cost them, they were up 7. And if they had the ball with 30 seconds left, and somehow they went into the fourth up 3. So that was just carelessness on carelessness. They can't have moments like that. I thought Rozier against the Wizards, he had a couple bad moments. One where I think he went in and missed a layup, and then the Wizards scored right away, and then he got ripped to half court, and they scored again. So surviving without Isaiah Thomas on the court and without some of those, without most of the majority of the starters on the court, has been an issue for the Celtics, and that's why they haven't been able to push out leads. That's why they haven't been able to hold leads. That's why they've played so many damn close games, is because their bench just hasn't, I don't want to say lived up to expectations, because I'm not sure there was a huge expectation on their bench, but their bench hasn't been nearly as helpful as I think it was last year when it really forced a lot of turnovers. And I think, debate with me if you want to, I think the biggest issue is that last year the bench basically had 4 guys, and it was healthy. Those were the guys that played. They had a 9-man rotation, and they were all, with the exception of Smart, who's basically a veteran because he defends like hell, they were all veteran guys who knew how to play defense, who forced turnovers, knew the scouting report. It was a mature group. And this year, I think, with Rozier, with Jaylen Brown, and sometimes Gerald Green.
So really what you're saying is that they're missing the maturity of one Evan Turner.
They are missing the maturity of the kid E.T. Yes, yes.
It makes sense, though, because if you like looked at two skill or like some skill sets you would want the second unit to be better at, I think it would be playmaking on offense and kind of more defensive versatility and length on defense. And those are kind of the two things that Evan Turner brought. So it makes sense that the bench is not playing as well as you would want. And it's kind of become predictable at this point. It's just like, oh, the Celtics are going to play shitty at the start of the second and the start of the fourth quarter. It's just like, you have to chalk that up. Things are going to go poorly during that time. And you're right. Brad has tried to kind of put Horford in there and kind of be the anchor of that. But still, they really struggle on offense when Isaiah's not in the game. And we saw that in Brooklyn and Philadelphia. But it seems like they don't know exactly what they're doing. And if you also take Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder off the court during those times, you're basically relying on either Marcus Smart in the post, Marcus Smart in a pick and roll with Kelly Olynyk, or Al Horford to be super aggressive, which is just not something that he does. So I just don't know what the design is. Like, what's the ultimate goal of the second unit offense? How are they going to generate points? Because right now, anything they're trying is really not working.
Last year is that – that it wasn't like the second unit was this super offensive team last year, but they forced a lot of turnovers, and they created their own transition offense, and that was just kind of how they survived. And this year hasn't exactly been the same way. You look at the numbers with Isaiah Thomas off the court. The Celtics have a 99.1 offensive rating, which is below that. That would be league worst for the full season. That's worse than the Sixers. That's worse than the Nets. That's worse than every single damn team out there as far as offense goes. With him on the court, they're scoring 113.2 possessions. Points per 100 possession, rather. So the difference with him on the bench is just insane. And that's just, obviously, that they've played better defense with him
off the court, but offense is such a major issue, and you see it time and time again that they have screwed up end of quarter situations, whether it's not getting a 2-for-1 or just botch it.
You wrote about 2-for-1 today. That's been such a major issue for them. And last night was they like executed the idea of a 2-for-1, but both times I remember it was Isaiah taking a 30-foot 3 with about 32 seconds left, and then Jay Crowder taking a 30-foot 3 with about 30 seconds left. Like, I get the idea of a 2-for-1, but it doesn't mean just shoot it immediately
Lou
once
Williams
you get within 30 feet.
Lou Williams.
He is a 7-time sixth man of the year.
My favorite player to watch in 2-for-1s because the way he hunts shots is just incredible. And he draws fouls from like 35 feet. He is incredible to watch in 2-for-1s. And the Celtics have not been, especially at the end of first and third quarters when Isaiah Thomas is normally sitting on the bench. And that's been a struggle for them. And it's just like they lose their form. They lose their shape when they don't have him running the offense. And it's just been, it's been a rough go. And we started this off trying to talk about the starting lineup and how good it's been. The downside of that is that the bench hasn't been as good. I do think the bench, when fully healthy and guys are playing fewer minutes and guys are playing in the roles that they should be playing, I think that bench will look better than it has for probably the majority of the season. But right now, this is a top-heavy team, a really top-heavy team that relies very, very heavily on the starters with Al Horford, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and your boy Amir Johnson. I know you said... You hated on him a little bit, but I think he's really played nice defense lately. So,
hey, I love the 20 minutes the big dog gives me every single night. I just wish he could do it for 25, maybe 30. That would be some wild stuff. But it's like every single time you look at the box score, Amir Johnson has exactly 20 minutes, and he's either scored 4 or 6 points, grabbed 5 rebounds, and has like 2 blocks. And it's awesome. It's great, but I just want more Big Dog.
More Big Dog.
I want more from the Big Dog. What's going on there? Why does he only play 20 minutes? I feel like I've asked you.
Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fitting on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
Why Amir Johnson only plays 20 minutes probably 17 times throughout the season,
but
and no one's been able to give me a good reason.
If he's useless in the starting five. So yeah.
I'm a man of contradiction.
I think, one, Kelly Olynyk and Jonas Jerebko, if Kelly Olynyk might be a better player. Jonas Jerebko has different skills. So, and Amir, like, there are certain units. I think it's a lot more feasible to play him against a lot of starting lineups, which are usually more traditional, than it is to play him, especially because you're going to be playing Al Horford too. And if you're playing against a small lineup, then having those two guys on the court may not be your best move. Now, you know, what happens from there? Who knows? Let's stop with the lineup talk. We went deep on the lineup talk.
It's your favorite topic. I'm soon discovering that you just love diving into the media stats site and looking at net ratings.
Like, today was technically my day off. The Celtics. I spent like hours just on NBA.com stats site. I just get lost in a rabbit hole in the NBA.com media stats site, and it just takes me down, man. Like, I embarked on today saying I was going to hit the gym, saying I was going to the grocery store,
and saying I was going to take it easy on Celtic stuff. And before I knew it, I was just neck deep in numbers and researching all sorts of stupid crap that I don't even really need to know. But hey, that's why we do this shit. We love this shit. We love this shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm jealous that you were able to do that all day. I spent the day trying to measure the impact of the heroin epidemic on violent crime in Philadelphia. So this basketball stuff seems fun compared to what I was doing.
Suggest that they legalize drugs in a certain area and maybe call it Hamsterdam?
Yeah, no, I ran that proposal right up to the chief of police. He said he'll look at it. But yeah, no, it turns out heroin's bad for people to use, and then people who sell it commit crimes. Weird stuff. That's why I went to school, to discover these things.
Not nearly as bad. Actually, very good is Micah Shrewsbury.
He's going to love that transition.
Who drew consideration from UMass for the coaching job before UMass decided to hire the guy from Winthrop, Pat Kelsey? Is that his name?
I'm not going to pretend like I know who the guy from Winthrop.
Yeah, Micah Shrewsbury is the Celtics. He's been their summer league coach. He has been on Brad Stevens' staff since the beginning. He used to coach at Butler. He used to coach at Purdue. And he became the latest Stevens assistant to draw some consideration from a Division I team. I feel like it's that time of year. Jay Larinaga is going to get consideration from somewhere. It's like an annual thing. Jay Larinaga draws consideration from some head coaching vacancy. I'm waiting for that. But this time it was Micah Shrewsbury, I believe, for the first time. So Brad Stevens' staff has mostly stayed intact over the years. I think Ron Adams is the only guy to leave. Darren Erman worked in the front office a little bit. But I think Adams was the only coach to leave. And he left for the Golden State Warriors, which seems like a pretty good decision in retrospect. Yeah.
It seems like it worked out for him. Now, so much attention is paid to Stevens and Stevens being a great young coach. I really don't know what roles each of the assistant coaches, like, I guess, play with a team. Is one conditioning? Like, I don't, like, what are kind of their sub responsibilities? I don't, like, I spent a year going to all those home games. I still have no idea. Like, so help me out here. What if they lost Micah Shrewsbury, what would
Shrewsbury
the impact be on the
defense.
Team?
He took over after Ron Adams left. He's basically their Tom Thibodeau now, except he's probably a lot friendlier to the players. I'm assuming he doesn't as frequently as Thibodeau does. Really sharp guy. I think he did a really nice job when he coached the summer league teams. Not that that's like this great opportunity to prove your coaching chops, but a really good demeanor, I think. Can be funny when he's asked sideline interviews.
He loves taking fun of Abby Chin when she stays home, so that's always good.
Created
good
the
fun.
Dancing Bear nickname for Gershon. I'm going to get this right. Yabusele. I think that was it.
Well done. Well done.
but yeah, so each coach has, you know, scouting responsibilities for certain teams. You know, that they have a list of teams. You do this, these guys, you do these guys, whatever. Micah's in charge of the defense. Other guys have other responsibilities as far as.
Is there an offensive coach? Is that Jay Larinaga?
I could be wrong there. Brandon Bailey, another assistant who used to be in the video room, he also has a lot of defensive responsibilities. He's so I forget who it was. I think Sullinger called him like the next Thibodeau to me. So shout out to Brandon Bailey. Yeah, that whole crew. It's a sharp crew. It's a really positive crew. And yeah, Michael would have definitely. I think he would have done a really good job at UMass if the Minutemen had hired him. So it's probably good for the Celtics. It's definitely good for the Celtics that he stuck around. He is a valuable asset. And sorry, UMass. I wonder if UMass is ever going to get good again.
No, they had the only way they got good was by paying Marcus Camby millions of dollars to go there.
You know, maybe they'll start paying dudes again. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure money in the Massachusetts government has been used for a lot worse. So if they're going to pay and they bring college basketball back to the state of Massachusetts, I'm fine with that.
Sam Packer getting a little political.
These are my lukewarm takes.
All right, let's get into the mystery machine real quick. Let's just run through this real quick. Who you got? First pick.
Rapid fire, Isaiah Thomas, elite scorer, real good. You know what sucked? Going to two basketball games, the first two basketball games I've been to in 2017, and having him be out for both of those games. Really missed him on those two nights. Showed how much the Celtics
needed. Monster game against Washington, trailed around Bradley Beal the whole time, had 20 points, what was it, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. Awesome alley-oop to Amir Johnson. Shout out to Amir, who got up for that one. So Avery Bradley, absolutely huge game from him.
Kelly Olynyk, but only Kelly Olynyk with 5 fouls, because last night he got his 5th foul and was aggressive as shit and was angry, and it was the most fun I've had ever watching Kelly Olynyk. So 5 foul Kelly, come on down.
That was some weird officiating.
I said last night that the second half was like the weirdest half of basketball I've seen in a long time. That third quarter made zero sense. I really thought the fix was in and they were trying to like make it so Washington could cover the spread. It was just like
when
really,
Johnson got called
really
for a
absurd.
Goaltend and then a technical, just
for hanging on the rim when he got his hands caught in the net.
That whole sequence was bizarre. There were a lot of truly bizarre sequences. I'm going to put Jay Crowder there because he hit a lot of big shots in the two games that Isaiah Thomas missed. I think he really won them that Brooklyn Nets game. So Jay Crowder, I think he might be getting shotgun.
Oh, he deserves it. Jay Crowder has been very underrated. I've tried to kind of steal the phrase impacts winning from Marcus Smart and give it to Jay Crowder, because I feel like Marcus Smart makes those like kind of crazy plays where he gets a loose ball or does like an FU steal, but Jay Crowder does it throughout the entire game and it's just like constantly doing the right thing, playing great defense, like hustling. So I feel like he deserves the impacts winning moniker more than Marcus Smart.
Slide that moniker over.
All right, I thank you for granting us the authority to do that. The last one, this is a tough one. I don't know who really stands out. You could give it to, Al Horford. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts? No one really stands out to me. No one, the bench has not been playing well. And, so it might just be Al Horford as a default.
That just for that third quarter against Philadelphia, man.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was great. But then where was he in the fourth quarter when they scored, like, what, 6 points?
The greatest fourth quarter anyone's ever played. But at least we'll always have that third, you know?
Yeah, people are going to remember that Philadelphia third quarter on that Sunday afternoon game.
Yeah, so there it is. There's the mystery machine. There is the episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you don't subscribe to us, you can search for Locked On Celtics anywhere you get your podcasts, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever else. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us you love us. Tweet us with the hashtag Rain and Jays.
we love your tweets. We appreciate them all. And we will be back Monday through Friday as usual with podcasts. We have the greatest Celtics talk on the internet, on the radio, wherever, in the universe. So
the greatest Celtics audio comes from us three dudes ever.
Perfect, perfect tagline there. The greatest Celtics audio.
Just cut the podcast, hard cut right after I say that. Or just keep this conversation in there and have a slow fade out. Your choice. You're the editor.
On a radio interview John Corrales did with some radio station in Maine. I forget.
It's either the Big Jab or some other station in Bangor, but it's good.
I'm sure it's delightful Celtics talk with my man John Corrales and maybe the Big Jab in Maine. Maybe not the Big Jab in Maine. With some radio station in Maine. Feel free to listen to that if you wish. Otherwise, that is it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On podcast.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, Millie's.
Hey, next up on Downtown, it's time for our weekly visit with John Corrales of RedsArmy.com and the Locked On Celtics podcast. Talk some Celtics here this afternoon after a very impressive win last night. That was good to see for the Celtics.
Yeah, you know, they stepped up, especially after that loss on Sunday. You just kind of hope that they would rebound. And that's kind of like the Celtics' MO, play down to a team like Sacramento or Phoenix or, Philly. And then bounce back to beat a really, really good team. So nice to see that they could do that again last night and really solidify their hold on the second seed.
Yeah, do you think that locked down the number two spot for them?
Pretty much at this point. We're talking about 11 games left, and Washington's got a ton of games on the road. They still got one more big road trip out west where they play Golden State and Utah, the Clippers. They've got a Cavs game in there. So they're not a great road team, and that's just going to be too tough of a stretch. To make up 2.5 games now with 11 games left, they need the Celtics to lose three times on top of them winning three more games than they do. So it really is almost impossible. Not impossible, so I'm not going to call it over yet, but I think the two seed is pretty well in hand, and now we can look at potentially the top seed. Also not a great chance, but it's possible.
Well, we'll talk more about that a little bit later on, but let's go back to last night and talk about the spark provided to the team by a little scuffle with Terry Rozier.
I know. Yeah, sometimes those things, you don't know how it's going to go, but you know, Terry Rozier and Brandon Jennings got into that little mix-up, and we see that those teams, they don't like each other. Before the game, Mike Gorman was saying that the teams didn't, like, give each other five before, you know, sometimes they intermingle before the game, like, hey, good game. They just stayed on their respective sides. Isaiah said, they don't like us. We don't like them. Let's do it. So it kind of energized the team a little bit, got them a little riled up. And the Celtics, when you get them riled up, they can respond in a very positive way. It has the potential to be negative, but that got a lot of those guys going, and that really fueled a huge, huge second quarter run. They really never lost full control of that game. It got a little dicey, but that really fueled a run that gave them full control of that game for pretty much the rest of the way.
Well, you guys wrote about it on RedsArmy.com with teams that are traditional rivals just not being very good. All of a sudden, the Wizards have emerged as a really strong rival. I think that would be a great playoff series if they were to meet again.
That would be fantastic. And, you know, with the Celtics having home court, it would really bode well for them. But any level of animosity kind of stokes that drama a little bit, makes it more interesting. The Celtics could go play a Milwaukee or a Miami or even a Toronto, and it wouldn't have that same flair right now because of the dust-up. You had the Crowder and John Wall, little nose boop, little poke-in-the-nose thing going on. you had the funeral game in Washington, then you had this little mix-up here. So little things like that. Although it harkens a tiny bit, just a tinge, of that old-school 80s rivalry kind of feel where they legitimately don't really like each other as a team. They might have, like, individual friendships. Isaiah Thomas is friends with John Wall, but I think when it comes time to putting on the uniform and facing team to team, there's no love lost. Seven games of that would be very well received by everybody in the NBA, I think.
We're talking with John Corrales of RedsArmy.com and the Locked On Celtics podcast. So, John, do you agree that the schedule, at least the rest of the way that the Celtics have, is the easiest, the most favorable in the league, at least among the contending teams?
Oh, absolutely. I don't even think it's really that close. They have a bunch of home games. They don't play on the road again until the first week of April. So they have a lot of time. They got one back-to-back left. They've got a bunch of days off. They got a game, a day off, a game, a couple of days off. They have really, theoretically, easy opponents. I say this having just lost to the Sixers a couple of days ago. But they've got easier opponents coming up, the Orlandos of the world, those types of teams. And even when they face a good team, Cleveland, you look at that schedule, and that schedule is a road game for Cleveland in the midst of a bunch of home games, and it's on a back-to-back. So that's a potential rest day for the Cavaliers. So they might even luck out and have that schedule be even easier by facing a Cavaliers team that's not exactly loading up to face them.
Yeah, speaking of rest days, the commissioner, Adam Silver, spoke out yesterday and again today on this idea of the NBA's rest protocol. He threatened penalties, but really, is he going to do anything?
I don't think he's going to do anything now. I think really what's happening now is you're seeing kind of, I don't want to say power struggle. I don't know how else to really phrase it, but the teams are sending clear messages to me that on Saturday night, primetime ABC game, 2 weeks in a row, the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the San Antonio Spurs all went out there and didn't have their biggest stars. And some of it was due to injury, but a lot of it was due to rest. And I think that that was kind of calculated. And now the commissioner, I think, is responding in kind by publicly letting everybody know, I've sent a letter to all of the owners to urge them to be involved. So that's kind of a shot back at the general managers. Like, oh, that's how you want to do your job? Well, now I'm going to make your job a little bit more harder by getting your bosses involved. And then threatening the penalties, that's something that I think no team really wants to deal with. Some financial penalties, you know, these owners, super rich, but nobody wants to lose money over this. So ultimately, feels like a lot of posturing because teams need to get this schedule situation fixed. Golden State Warriors are playing 8 games in 8 different cities. The Cavaliers have 4 more back-to-backs on top of that. That was 1 of 5 for them. Scheduling-wise, it's not ideal, and it's very complicated, and nobody's completely innocent in this, but I think ultimately all sides will sit down over the summer and figure out a better way to schedule these games so the rest is reduced, the need to rest is reduced, that fans get to see the guys that they paid a lot of money for, and that TV networks get to put on the marquee games that they've paid a lot of money for. And ultimately, the players want that too, because that TV money is what fuels this big increase in their paychecks. They don't want to lose that. So they're not going to keep doing this forever. But I think ultimately there will be a solution. And they've already shortened the season. They shortened the preseason next year to add a week so they can kind of reduce some of these back-to-back. So it's happening, but not without some posturing and difficulty.
So realistically, looking at the schedule, the Celtics with 11 games left, the Cavaliers 13 left and a 2-game lead for that number one spot. They've struggled while sitting people. Cleveland 5-5 in their last 10 games. You got to assume the Celtics would need to win, what, 8 at least out of their last 11 to have a shot at number one?
Probably. That sounds about right. They can certainly do it. They have the schedule lining up to do that. And again, that big game to watch for if you're concerned about the top seed, which I'm not personally. It's more of a, it's kind of nice, but it's not overly important. But if you're really looking for that and you want that top seed, that Cleveland Celtics game is going to be a huge one because the Celtics can gain a full game in the standings while Cleveland potentially rests guys on that game, on that day. Because when I looked at the schedule, that stands out like a big sore thumb right there. That's a game where I expect the Cavaliers to rest some guys, to not even send them on the road and have them travel, to just have them kind of stay at home, relax, take a day off, and play another home game in a couple of days. So if the Celtics can win that game and get that situation, then it'll get really interesting.
There you go. John Corrales talking Celtics every Tuesday here on Downtown. John, thanks as always. Enjoy the games the rest of the week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
You got it, my friend.